Today is Monday, the 13th of October, 2025, and this is the World Socialist Website. Sixteen workers killed in Tennessee explosion. Industrial carnage followed by media cover-up. By Jerry White. On the morning of Friday, October 10, a massive explosion obliterated a building at Accurate Energetic Systems, AES, a military explosives plant in rural Tennessee, killing 16 workers in one of the worst industrial disasters in the United States in decades. The blast, near the town of Bucksnort, felt more than 20 miles away, left only the charred debris of the building and burnt-out vehicles in the parking lot. "There's nothing to describe. It's gone," said Humphreys County Sheriff Chris Davis. Quote, "More than 300 people have been over every square inch and found no survivors," end quote. The names of the workers killed have not yet been released. Authorities are identifying victims through DNA testing because no recognizable remains were recovered. Residents told reporters that the deaths struck a community already devastated by the 2021 floods that killed 20 people. The corporate media also decided that there's nothing to describe, but in the sense that they would write as little as possible about the disaster. Within days, national news outlets dropped the story entirely. 16 workers were incinerated in a US weapons plant, the largest mass death in an industrial disaster since the 2010 Upper Big Branch mine explosion, and the networks and other corporate media simply moved on. The New York Times buried the story on page A17 of its Sunday print edition, and there is no mention of it on the front page of its website. The Washington Post, owned by billionaire Jeff Bezos, has a small article buried on its front page. The Wall Street Journal does not even have that, with no mention of the explosion on its front page. Jacobin Magazine, the flagship of the Democratic Socialists of America, presents itself as a publication concerned with the interests of the working class, but is in fact a faction of the Democratic Party. It has published nothing on the disaster in Tennessee. This silence exposes the contempt of the corporate media and the political establishment for the lives of workers, along with the fear that the unending carnage in the industrial slaughterhouse of American capitalism will fuel mass anger and rebellion. The media blackout coincides with the deliberate downplaying of Trump's plans to invoke the Insurrection Act and establish military rule to crush opposition. Accurate Energetic Systems supplies explosives and demolition charges for the US Army and major defense contractors. It has received more than $120 million in recent contracts for TNT and plastic-bonded explosives. AES's 1,300-acre complex has a long record of violations. In 2014, an explosion killed one worker and injured three others in a building run by Rio Ammunition. In 2019, state inspectors cited serious hazards after AES employees suffered seizures from exposure to cyclonite, RDX, an explosive linked to nervous system damage. Residue was found on work tables and even in the break room, yet fines were quietly reduced to $7,200. 1 year later, according to the UK's Daily Mail, maintenance supervisor Greg McCree stopped a fire in the same melt-pour building that has now been destroyed, using only a garden hose. Quote, "On Friday, I was a hero. On Monday, I was a piece of crap," he said after being fired for violating policy. The company reportedly ignored the unsafe conditions he had reported. The Tennessee tragedy confirms warnings made at the July 27 public hearing convened by the International Workers' Alliance of Rank-and-File Committees, IWARFC, into the death of Stellantis worker Ronald Adams Sr. at the Dundee engine plant in Michigan. Adams, 63, was killed amid a rush to restart production while basic safety measures were bypassed. Quote, "These tragedies are not accidents," explained Mack truck worker and IWA RFC leader Will Lehman. "They are the outcome of a system that subordinates human life to profit. That a company is demonstrating it is willing to socially murder more than 20% of its workforce is an immense step forward on the class war that's escalating in the US. As we said at the public hearing of Ronald Adams Sr., we insist that workers' lives matter. For that to happen, we need to build rank-and-file committees in every factory and workplace to put production and safety under the control of workers, not the corporations and their accomplices in the trade union bureaucracy." End quote. Every year, more than 5,000 US workers die from traumatic injuries, the vast majority of which go unreported anywhere in the media. Another 120,000 die from occupational diseases caused by toxic exposures and long-term hazards. The Trump administration has placed OSHA under the control of David Keeling, a former UPS and Amazon executive who opposed even heat protections for delivery drivers. The ongoing government shutdown is being used to slash non-essential safety enforcement. The union apparatus shares responsibility. The UAW has remained silent about the deaths of Adams and other Stellantis workers. Its Joint Labour Management Safety programs prioritise production speed over life. UAW President Sean Fain has aligned the bureaucracy with the Pentagon's war drive, selling out strikes at defence firms such as GE Aerospace and suppressing others at GM General, which manufactures military vehicles. Fain has praised the union's collaboration with the Roosevelt administration during World War II, a partnership that banned strikes, jailed socialists, and placed industry under wartime military discipline. The explosion in Tennessee is inseparable from the US military industrial build-up for global war. Military.com recently observed that, quote, "When production rises, so do the risks for workers and small towns where that work takes place," end quote. Wartime demand, it explained, means speed-ups, cost-cutting, and the abandonment of oversight. US and NATO build-ups for wars in Ukraine and Gaza and preparations for conflict with China have triggered an expansion of arms productions in the US and around the world. Explosions and fires have occurred in munitions plants from Arkansas to Virginia, as small towns once again bear the deadly burden of reindustrialization for war. According to the Quincy Institute, private firms received $2.4 trillion in Pentagon contracts from 2020 to 2024, more than half of all Defense Department spending. Five corporations, Lockheed Martin, RTX or Raytheon, Boeing, General Dynamics and Northrop Grumman, accounted for $771 billion of that total. U.S. military spending now exceeds $1 trillion a year. While executives enrich themselves, the workers who produce their weapons are maimed or killed. In St. Louis, 3,200 Boeing workers have been striking for 2 months against poverty wages and unsafe conditions. The company is using strikebreakers. Trump, acting as the open political agent of the corporate military elite, has threatened to deploy troops to major US cities to crush disorder, a clear warning that the same methods used to suppress protests will be used against defense and industrial workers who resist the war economy. The deliberate burying of the Tennessee catastrophe is part of this campaign. The Trump administration is waging an all-out war on the working class, the central target of its drive toward dictatorship, while the Democratic Party largely agrees with its social program and works to contain popular resistance. Television networks and major newspapers, owned by the same conglomerates that profit from militarism, offered a few perfunctory reports before turning to celebrity gossip and election polls. No national debate, no nightly updates, no congressional outrage. The International Workers' Alliance of Rank and File Committees, IWARFC, insists that the defence of life and safety cannot be entrusted to corporations, the state, or their accomplices in the union apparatus. Workers must form independent rank and file safety committees with full authority to halt production over unsafe conditions, demand release of all safety data, and hold company officials criminally responsible for deaths and injuries. This fight is inseparable from the struggle against war and dictatorship. The same system that sends workers to die on the battlefield also sacrifices them in the factories that feed the war machine. The military-industrial complex must be converted to produce for human need, schools, hospitals, housing, and safe workplaces, instead of destruction. The explosion in Tennessee is a warning. Unless the working class intervenes consciously to take control of production, more towns will burn, more workers will die, and more families will identify their loved ones by DNA. The alternative is clear. The international unification of the working class to abolish the profit system and build a socialist society based on human need, not corporate greed. The International Workers' Alliance of Rank and File Committees, IWARFC, calls on all workers to come forward with any information about the explosion in Tennessee or other industrial accidents in the United States and internationally. Contact the WSWS using the form on the website. For details on the rank and file investigation into the death of Stellantis worker Ronald Adams Sr., visit wsws.org. Trump orders military paychecks as troops move into cities, by Patrick Martin. The White House announced Sunday that all U.S. soldiers will receive their full paychecks on October 15, despite the federal shutdown, after President Trump instructed Secretary of War Pete Hegseth to shift funds within the Pentagon budget. All other employees of the federal government are either furloughed or working without pay because of the partial shutdown after the new fiscal year began October 1 without congressional passage of a budget. Trump's action has two interrelated and deeply sinister purposes. He wishes to ensure against any discontent within the ranks of the military as he deploys thousands of soldiers into American cities in a step-by-step coup. And he wants the paychecks delivered before the October 18 No Kings protests, widely expected to be the largest ever demonstrations against his drive to establish a presidential dictatorship. According to the White House Office of Management and Budget, which is spearheading the permanent layoff of thousands of federal workers, the money is coming from $8 billion in unspent Pentagon funds for research and development. In a social media post Saturday, Trump said he would use his, quote, authority as Commander-in-Chief to direct our Secretary of War, Pete Hegseth, to use all available funds to get our troops paid on October 15th, end quote. He later posted, quote, we have identified funds to do this, and Secretary Hegseth will use them to pay our troops, end quote. Pentagon funds will be shifted if the partial federal shutdown continues through Wednesday, as is expected. In that case, 2 million civilian federal workers will receive no pay, while 1.3 million uniformed military will receive their full pay. The Republican-controlled House of Representatives has passed a continuing resolution that would extend the budget deadline from October 1 to November 22. But Senate Democrats blocked the bill's passage through a filibuster, demanding that Trump and the Republicans agree to restore health insurance premium subsidies for millions of people enrolled under the Affordable Care Act. While neither the White House nor the Pentagon acknowledged this explicitly, the full paychecks for soldiers will also apply to National Guard troops who have been federalized for deployment in Washington, D.C., Chicago, Los Angeles, and Portland, Oregon, including troops from Illinois and Texas, who are now at a training facility outside Chicago. All federalized National Guard troops are paid out of the Pentagon budget, not the budget of the state from where they come. The decision to pay the troops on time comes amid increasingly hysterical denunciation of the upcoming October 18 No Kings protests by Republican congressional leaders and state governors, with demands that the National Guard be mobilized against the protesters in Washington, D.C. and in other cities. On Friday, Speaker Mike Johnson and House Majority Leader Steve Scalise smeared the demonstrators as Hamas supporters and terrorists who were carrying out the wishes of Antifa. House Majority Whip Tom Emmer called October 18 a Hate America rally, although the previous No Kings protests on June 14 brought an estimated 5 to 11 million people onto the streets in a massive but entirely peaceful show of opposition to Trump. The response from leading Democrats was tepid at best. Senator Bernie Sanders, who is scheduled to be a speaker at an October 18 rally, issued a brief statement on Facebook declaring that the protests would be Love America rallies. But he did acknowledge that those who participated were opposed to Trump's drive to turn this country into an authoritarian society. As in his other statements on the subject, however, Sanders proposed no action outside of verbal protest. He did not suggest that Trump and Vice President Vance should be impeached and removed from office, let alone any action by working people leading up to and culminating in a general strike. Like all the Democrats, Sanders is committed to the defense of the profit system and the capitalist state machine that upholds the interests of the financial oligarchy. While National Guard troops are on the streets of Washington, D.C. and in Memphis, Tennessee, where the state's Republican Governor Bill Lee deployed nearly 200 soldiers at Trump's request, the troop deployments in Portland and Chicago have been delayed by court orders. A federal appeals court allowed Trump to federalize 200 Oregon National Guard soldiers, but barred him from deploying them in Portland, declaring that the president's repeated claims that the city is being burned down by Antifa terrorists was untethered to the facts. Trump has made use of videos generated by fascist provocateurs masquerading as journalists, who pick fights with protesters peacefully demonstrating outside the Immigration and Customs Enforcement ICE facility in Portland. On Wednesday, Trump invited several of these fascists to the White House for his summit meeting on the supposed threat of Antifa, which does not even exist as an organization. In Chicago, a federal appeals court issued a ruling similar to that in Oregon, allowing 200 troops from the Texas National Guard, as well as 300 federalized Illinois National Guard troops, to remain at a training facility outside the city, but barring their deployment on the streets. The court cited the likelihood that the presence of the troops would be inflammatory. The appeals court effectively rebuffed the Trump administration's claim that a lower court judge had, quote, impermissibly second-guessed the commander-in-chief's military judgments, end quote. But it allowed the Texas troops to stay in Illinois, declaring, quote, members of the National Guard do not need to return to their home states unless further ordered by a court to do so, end quote. A representative of the U.S. Northern Command, which controls all federal military operations within the borders of the United States, said the troops sent to Portland and Chicago are, quote, not conducting any operational activities at this time, end quote. Trump also proposed to send troops to New Orleans, as well as to other cities in California besides Los Angeles. Significantly, billionaire Democrat Mark Benioff, co-founder of Salesforce.com and owner of Time magazine, issued an appeal for Trump to send troops to San Francisco, claiming the police department was too understaffed to preserve law and order. Under the Posse Comitatus Act, however, the U.S. military cannot be used as a substitute or supplement for local police. The only exception is when the president invokes the Insurrection Act of 1807, based on a total breakdown of local and state authorities, which Trump has openly threatened to do over the past 2 weeks. At a meeting with his cabinet of fascist flatterers on Thursday, Trump repeated the lies that he has voiced with increasing frequency to justify invoking the Insurrection Act. Quote, "We're directly confronting the sinister threat of left-wing domestic terrorism or violence," he said. "Antifa is out of control in Portland and other places," end quote. In an appearance on Sunday on NBC's Meet the Press, Vice President J.D. Vance said that Trump was still considering whether to invoke the Insurrection Act, clearly holding it over the heads of Democratic mayors and governors to demand further collaboration with Trump's drive to military rule. Ukrainian court rejects motion to dismiss judge for bias, as Bogdan Syrichuk is barred from accessing dental care, by Clara Weiss. On October 3, 2025, a Ukrainian court ruled against a request from the defence that the judge in the case of Ukrainian Trotskyist, Bogdan Syrichuk, should be removed. Bogdan, then 25 years old, was arrested in April 2024 on charges of, quote, high treason under martial law, end quote, which carry between 15 years and life in prison. Bogdan's defence lawyers had argued that the judge should be recalled for bias. Bogdan's indictment was based primarily on articles that he wrote and translated for or distributed from the World Socialist website, the publication of the International Committee of the Fourth International. Yet, while the prosecution describes the WSWS as an information agency of the Kremlin, the WSWS and Bogdan's Young Guard of Bolshevik Leninists, YGBL, have consistently opposed the Russian invasion of Ukraine from an internationalist standpoint, fighting for the unity of the Russian and Ukrainian working class. This line has been publicly documented, including in the article cited as evidence by the prosecution. Since his arrest, Bogdan has been detained in an overcrowded prison in Nikolaev in southern Ukraine. In virtually all court decisions regarding his arrest and the seizure of his property, the court used language that was almost identical to the requests submitted by the prosecuting body, the Ukrainian Secret Service, SBU. In many instances, entire paragraphs were simply copied and pasted. This is under conditions where, in multiple court sessions, the prosecution has been unable to muster any evidence to substantiate its grave charges, despite calling multiple witnesses. The recent decision not to dismiss the judge for bias underscores yet again that, within the Ukrainian court system, everything is stacked against Bogdan. A few days earlier, on October 1, the Nikolaev Appeals Court had ruled against a request by the defence that Bogdan's imprisonment be changed to house arrest. The same appeals court had also ruled against the same request of the defence in July. The unlawful detention of Bogdan is the principal basis for his case before the European Court of Human Rights, which recently agreed to hear the case. Bogdan's lawyers argue that his arrest constituted a violation of Article 5 of the European Convention of Human Rights, which guarantees the right to liberty. But many other aspects of the case also speak to a systematic violation of his basic human and democratic rights. In particular, there is growing evidence that the conditions under which he is being held constitute inhuman treatment, which is prohibited by Article 3. Bogdan was already in ill health at the time of his arrest, suffering, in particular, from serious dental problems. Because of his arrest, he was unable to get a planned dental procedure. Now, in a prison with poor food and hygiene, he has been suffering from pain because several of his teeth are severely damaged. However, an urgently necessary appointment with a dentist outside the prison which was originally due to take place in July, has been repeatedly postponed. This kind of procedure is not uncommon for the Ukrainian prison system. In June, the European Court of Human Rights ruled in the case of Benyuk v. Ukraine that the Ukrainian state had withheld necessary treatment for 19 months from a prisoner who was suffering from adenture, loss of teeth. Despite the authorities being aware of the diagnosis since at least October 2019, it was only thanks to the intervention of an NGO, Youth with a Mission, that the prisoner, Benyuk, who had no financial means to pay for his treatment, received dentures in 2021 at the expense of the NGO. The ECHR found that the state of Ukraine violated Articles 3 and 13 of the European Convention of Human Rights. Article 3 prohibits torture and inhuman or degrading treatment or punishment, and Article 13 says, quote, "Everyone whose rights and freedoms, as set forth in this convention, are violated, shall have an effective remedy before a national authority, notwithstanding that the violation has been committed by persons acting in an official capacity." End quote. The World Socialist website has turned to the NGO to request its involvement in the case of Bogdan Syrichuk. To support the campaign to free Bogdan Syrichuk and his case before the ECHR, please go to the World Socialist website to sign the petition, donate, and learn more. For these articles and more, visit the World Socialist website, wsws.org. For the World Socialist website, this has been Jenny Campbell.
The World Socialist website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.